Hello and welcome back to Matt's Trucking Great Podcast. Matt Ireland as your host once again, and today I am delighted to be joined, or rejoined, depending on how you look at it, by my good friend and brother from another mother, I think, Paul O'Callaghan from Ireland. Paul, it's a pleasure to talk to you again, mate.
No problem at all, Matt. Nice to be back having a bit of a chat. It's been a while, and I think there's been enough time passed that I'll have plenty of content for you anyway.
Yeah, I should say so. So for any listeners who are new to this channel and didn't listen to us on the Truck and Driver one, we used to regularly catch up because of Paul's travels about here and there that he's going to get into. But obviously, if you are a previous listener, you'll know all about Paul and what he gets up to and whatnot. So where are you? What have you been up to, Paul? Because the last time we chatted was a bit before Christmas, if I remember rightly.
Yeah, that'll be right. Yeah, it was just end up probably towards the end of the cattle season, as we call it, in the north of Australia. So that was busy right up until Christmas. And I left Darwin around Christmas and I went to New Zealand. Craig McCauley, who a lot of people don't know, kindly put me up. He's another one of our ilk who's obsessed with trucks, and we get on quite well. So spent a few days there with Craig. I was actually going to spend a bit longer in New Zealand, and then just got a little bit ill, nothing major. And I went Bolivia then. That was kind of where I was heading for. That was always the plan. But actually had Christmas with Craig, and we did a typical, you know, what truck drivers do on their day off. We went and did more driving. So we went. Craig's got a Toyota RAV4, and myself and Craig and Dave McCoyd, he's the editor of New Zealand Truck Magazine. We went on a drive, a mountain kind of a pass, an off-road drive, which is only open a couple of days each year. And so this is in the north of the South Island of New Zealand. And I really should remember the name of the road. Craig will be giving out to me. But anyway, we ended up in Mount Linford, so that was quite interesting. And then I went from there. Anyway, I flew from there to Bolivia.
Wow.
So it's somewhere I'd never been before, and somewhere I'd wanted to see for a while. I did Chile a couple of years ago, and just always wanted to see Bolivia. It's quite hard to get to. So I went from took one flight up to Auckland, and then from Auckland to Santiago, and in Chile, and then Santiago to Lima in Peru, and then from Lima in Peru to La Paz, Bolivia. So
quite a shack about then.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, that's kind of what had put me off going there initially. But as with anywhere I go on holidays, of course, it was all revolved around trucks. And what really drew me there mainly was just to go and see and video and photograph the old Volvo trucks they have, which have mostly originated in Europe and a lot from Scandinavia. And for some reason, you'll be aware of. And I was, for some reason out there, it's from what I was there for probably about I was there for 2 weeks almost, and it's I'd say it was about 90% Volvo, and of that I'd say 60% of those were F12s, and then the rest was, you know, version one. So stuff that you won't see really anywhere else. Everywhere you looked there was old Volvos at work. So that's basically why I went there, and everything else then was a bonus after that.
Oh, absolutely. And I suppose it's their sort of summertime-ish out there, Southern Hemisphere, that sort of time of year.
Yeah, it was. I had shorts on, but probably, you know, a lot of people had jackets. It was comfortable. I'd put it like that, and quite a variation then, because you've got three different kind of geographical areas. You want kind of different climates. You know, you've got the Altiplano, like the high, you know, the high plains,
yeah.
And then it's kind of, you know, the Andes and the youngest mountains and that, and then you've got the Amazon region, you know, which borders with Brazil. So it's got quite a lot of variations. But flew into La Paz, and you know, when you arrive in a new country, it's always kind of quite exciting, and kind of impression, yeah, when you leave the airport. I was immediately impressed. You know, I just got a taxi. I think it was an old, loads of old cars there, like old Corollas and things like that. Down into so the airport is up on kind of like a higher part. La Paz is sort of built on the side of almost kind of nearly the side of a mountain, you know. And then I suppose when it expanded, they had to go upwards, and the airport's up there. So on the way down to the this main city of La Paz from El Alto, like past saw two or three F12s, you know, like two or three trucks in total, and they were And they're all like, "Great stuff."
You just
I was like,
figured this is a good sign.
I've come to the right place, you know." And quite cheap as well. You know, I stayed in a really nice hotel in the old part of the city there, and I think it was only something like, you know, maybe $30 or something like that, 20 something euros, you know,
Brilliant.
and really nice. So they have a nice kind of indigenous culture out there, you know, the way you'd see the ladies with the kind of bowler hats and the big kind of dresses that instead of I thought it was quite funny where, you know, a lot of female clothing now it's designed to sort of hug shapes and kind of maybe flatter a bit more. This is the opposite. This is they want to make their hips look as wide as possible, you know. Maybe it's something to do with fertility, I don't know. But anyway, we digress, you know.
Yes, absolutely. So, what do you have a rental car and just
Yes.
go about?
I didn't really book anything before I went. I wanted to see what it, you know, would be like when I went out there. So yeah, I found just a local hire company, and while I was kind of researching before I went out, you know, these international driving permits, a lot of countries you actually need those, and of course I have one, but didn't have it with me. I think that's somewhere in Australia. Like it's a pretty kind of antiquated kind of a thing. You can get them off the AA and different companies. Anyway,
Yes.
I didn't have one. I was wondering how that would go when I went to hire the car, you know. So when I went to hire the car, I think I met them on. They came out on a messaged the guy, and yeah, it was nice. It was a kind of like a family run kind of thing. But anyway, they didn't even ask me for a driving license, not to mention an international driving license. Once they had my passport, and they got the deposit, and it wasn't. I think it was maybe set like $75 a day or something like that. So
Yeah.
50. So anyway, I was looking at, they had little Suzuki Jimneys, which were cheaper, and they're tough little vehicles. So that was what I wanted. He didn't have any. I ended up with a Toyota RAV4,
Yeah.
which actually was, you know, a far more comfortable vehicle anyway. So that was, yeah, I had that for, I hired it for, took it for 10 days initially. And where I wanted to go was, you know, the way you may have seen some videos from Bolivia where, I think it's on Volvo Trucks channel, you know, the world's most dangerous road of
Yeah.
death. There was like an F10 rigid going down there. Anyway, I wanted to go into the mountains more so than, so that's kind of north rather than going south to, you know, the salt lakes and Lake Titicaca and that. So yeah, headed north, and yeah, it definitely lived up to expectations. And when I left the city originally, I was thinking, you know, you'd see a lot of Land Cruisers and like rugged four-wheel drive vehicles, and you wonder, well, sort of, why do they need those? And yeah, I discovered after a while, when I got into the mountains, like I actually was feeling a little bit sorry for the RAV4, because they'll have like paved roads, and all of a sudden then they're just massive potholes. So you never really you're better off to never really get up to too much speed. And then there's places where the road just completely washed away, and you were driving in gravel. So by the time I handed it back, you know, the tires when I picked it up were just kind of getting pretty close to the wear blocks. And of course, when I handed them back, they were fairly well cut up. But I was wondering if there was going to be anything said. They didn't say anything, but no, it was fantastic. Yeah, when I went and liked it, and like I said, like just everywhere you look, there's just old trucks at work, and everyone seems to be reasonably happy. Maybe they don't know any different, and all the drivers there I noticed were taking really good care of their trucks. So when they don't have digi cards and tachograph hours, they're not really trying to rush to get places, if you know what I mean.
No
So
time
they're
pressure.
no time pressure, I'd say. Yeah, and also trying to prolong the life of the vehicles, is quite often you'd see they have their wife and their children with them. So just a nice kind of an old way of operating.
Yeah, absolutely. And for those that haven't really seen any photos and stuff like that of a lot of South America with regards to the trucks and unaware, as Paul sort of touched on at the beginning, there's a big export market for secondhand trucks. Like I say, especially Scandinavia, because there's six wheelers as well, the Netherlands and a few others. And some of the groups I'm on Facebook, you regularly see contributors from South America with photographs of these old Volvos still wearing their European. I think there's even some English ones out there here and there, not many, but just with like the new license plate put on and away they go. It's I find it fascinating. I think it's brilliant because you've got a good chance of seeing companies that don't exist any longer, and their liveries are still living on.
That's right, yeah, and that's what I would, there was always the expectation to see a company you recognize, and I actually did. I saw two trucks from Norway, from Tenden Transport, so
Oh,
both of them were
brilliant.
F12 Globetrotters, but they do so many modifications to there, it won't resemble in a lot of cases what the truck originally would have been. So, for example, this was like an eight by f a long 8x4 rigid with an F12 Globetrotter cab, which he never had. And so they're swapping cabs and chassis and axles. And the big thing I noticed out there as well was most of them are hub reduction axles, like so big, big heavy axles, and I suppose more rugged. And the other thing I noticed as well was I didn't see one forklift all the time I was there. Everything
Wow.
is handled. These wooden bodies with like maybe doors at the back, obviously, and a side door, so they seem to be handball and everything. I just on the second day I was there, they have actually a cable car system in La Paz, which I hadn't really been aware of, but it's that's how people get around it. And it's an ingenious way of moving people around, especially when you're talking such steep hills there. So I just hope you can buy a car that's pretty cheap and headed off, and I just got off at a stop, and oh, here we go. There's a Swedish F816 version one, and then I went for a walk. And basically, what it was like an area where it was just a kind of a fruit market, and all of the fruit vendors, were operating out of these old trucks like F7s and F6s. And yeah, when a country doesn't have, from what I could see where I was, when there's no supermarkets and everything is sold kind of on the street, it really makes it for a vibrant country. Like once you go to the little towns, like everyone is selling things on the streets,
Yeah, and I guess it'll all be seasonal like it used to be over here, you know,
yeah
with yeah.
yeah that's right. Yeah, I didn't see much in the way of refrigeration either. So and you just mentioned something there about old companies and logos. I didn't really see any ex British ones. I saw a Henk Vlot, which I'm sure
Yeah,
you know from Holland.
Dutch container haul, yeah.
Yeah, saw one of those. And then what I noticed then when I was in around El Alto was they seem to actually make up graphics and stickers of, we'll say, European companies. So there was one, it was like an F, it was a Volvo tipper, like a dumper, we'll say, 6x4, but it had Donegal groupage stickers on the side of it, which none of they didn't make any sense. So I think they seem to be almost, it's kind of quite proud to have some sort of European name or logo on the truck,
Yeah.
So it was interesting to see that as well. But
It's interesting as well that it's like 90% Volvo and they've really, really cornered the market. I mean, I wonder how that's come about, whether it's just they became really abundant and there's an awful lot of spares because there's a lot of them and people obviously don't want to deviate off. I mean, were there many like, because Mercedes is quite often a good, rugged, reliable truck for a sort of country like that, or no?
No, so I still haven't got the definitive answer. Some people will tell you that the in the like in high altitude and that they're the best engine, and that the V8s can't hack it. So I always like to put that one out there to get a few lads talking. I don't know. I don't. It might have been a case that that's just what they started and they got with and they got the parts and the so no I that's my own guess of what I've seen there. I like I'm still, it has to be 90% Volvo. After Volvo, there was a couple of Scanias. Again, they'd be six cylinders, maybe like R420s and that. I saw probably one, maybe yeah. So I'd say next is Scania. Next then would be Renault. I saw a couple of maybe premiums, and I saw one DAF. Didn't see any MAN. Didn't see any Mercedes, Iveco. So it's the interesting thing was when I came back up. Oh yeah, and servicing then and garages. Well, that's all done on the side of the road.
Yeah.
I actually found just by accident up in El Alto, I should say. I found the area where the trucks are being serviced and maintained,
Oh,
and
brilliant.
it was literally just on the side of the road. Like, and they must have have an abundance of parts, and obviously they have this was labor is cheap as well, so they have the mechanics to do it, and they'll just take on anything. It was great to see that. And you said just about the import thing, so they come in through Chile, you know. Bolivia is landlocked. It wasn't always landlocked, but they were in there was a back in the day there was a conflict with Chile, and they lost their coastline. So anyway, the trucks come into Chile, and then they end up in Bolivia. But an interesting thing as well was with the cars, they have cars going around with no number plates, so they're illegal imports. Basically, they have no documents. And how I found out about that was there was actually the fuel shortage when I was there. Now, this is previous to the whole Iran conflict, and I was wondering what was going on, and basically there was just a shortage of fuel, and there was like big queues going into a filling station. So I was driven for a couple of days, and I was in kind of gone through the mountains, and I was down in the, you know, kind of more the Amazon sort of basin area, and I was queuing up for like an hour or two, and eventually I got talking to a guy, and what I deciphered what he was saying, he pointed out, he said, "No, you've got a plaque." So a plaque was a registration, and he
Yeah.
says, "With the plaque you can go to the top of the queue."
Oh.
So oh yeah, so okay, well I don't have to be told twice, and that's what happened. I went up to the top, and someone let me in. So how was explained to me those guys with the that don't have the that have the illegal imports with no papers, like they're actually not allowed to fill from the pump. They have to put it into a container first, and then
Right.
you know buy it. Yeah. So the fuel thing. So they've got a new government came in that just came in like in December, and they're getting rid of the they got rid of the fuel subsidies. So fuel had doubled in price, if not tripled. So between that and the shortages, like it was a bit kind of mental what went on. And in the end, actually, they had there was a lot of protests out there. So obviously, the workers' union got together, and they were protesting against these the cut in subsidies. And I had probably had the car for a week, and I got back to El Alto, and I was going to go south then. I wanted to go down to Santa Cruz and basically, you know, photograph more trucks. What else are you going to do? But you know, the
Yeah.
main sort of the more I was in the mountains, I wanted to go to just see a little bit of the more kind of trunk routes. But I actually couldn't leave. I couldn't leave the city. The blockades had kind of locked, more or less locked the country down. So I went, sort of went driving, and everywhere you went, the roads were blocked. And then I tried another little way around, and they were blocked. And even at one point, I just stopped, and I was just kind of observing what was going on. And the police kind of came up to the roadblock, and all the roadblock is. It's pretty harmless. Like they have little rocks out in the road, you could literally drive through it. But what I was told, if you drive through it, they'll just pelt your car with rocks.
Yeah.
And it got a little bit kind of tense when the police pulled up. There was two police cars, and I could hear a bit of shouting. And the police didn't go through. They turned around.
All right.
So yeah, so you know, I don't know. You know, some of these kind of countries, it's interesting to see, you know, how things work. And in the end, I actually had I returned the car a couple of days early because I couldn't go anywhere. And you know, I was talking to a couple of other tourists. People had cut their holidays short, so I was quite lucky to even do what
Yeah,
I got.
to get
Yeah,
out when you could, sort of thing.
the guy when I could, yeah, because I actually met while I was at that little roadblock. There was a guy who pulled up, and he had an ex-Swedish, a version 3 F816 cattle truck, rigid and drag. And I had seen him a couple of days beforehand in the mountains. I just saw it on the road because they're going that slow that you can always have time to stop the car and get out and take a photograph. And he recognized me,
Yeah.
so it was a couple of days later. I got talking to him anyway, and he was going to Santa Cruz. He had a load of cattle from he was coming from the kind of you know that Amazon region. So it would have been a long drive, like a couple of days drive. And you know they're chewing on coca leaves, you know, because I was telling him I was a truck driver as well. And he said, "Oh yeah, but lifestyle, how long? How do you keep going?" And I said, "I don't know." Go to sleep for a while, and you know, I'd say he was going on the coca leaves. But anyway, basically, what was I said? What are you going to do now? You can't go through the roadblock. And he said, no, he was going to have to try and sell his cattle to an abattoir in that region in El Alto. But then he wasn't sure if he was going to get paid for them. So you know, they talk about struggles, and I thought, geez, that guy is really, he's really up, you know, really, really up against it. So I think there might have been a bit of an agreement after. They might have brought in some of the subsidies. But you know, when you looked at the trucks they had and how tough they were doing, and then they've got rid of this fuel subsidy, you think like Jesus, it's every country has its challenges for truckers, that's for sure, you know.
Yeah, I don't think any country has it good, do they?
No, just different challenges.
Yeah.
Definitely. No, I got really, really impressed. Really, you know, like the country. I was stopped at a couple of little, anywhere I'd see trucks, like a, you know, stopped, and you can eat pretty cheap there as well. So generally, you'll start off, you know, it'll be like a kind of like a soup thing, and then it'll be chicken and rice and a bit of dessert after. But it caught up with me towards the final day, as I think it's quite a regular thing. I don't know where I got, like, I was just not very fussy about where I was eating. Like, you're going to a little village and everyone more or less is doing food. But there was one little small place, and I actually saw a cat in the kitchen, you know. So I don't know if I picked it up or something else. But no, it's somewhere I'd go back to again. Like, it felt safe everywhere you were, you know, and it's predominantly Catholic country as well. So no, it was definitely worth going to anyway.
No, brilliant. Did you encounter any hostility for you taking photos of trucks, or was everyone pretty
No,
open to it?
no. In fairness, that's a good point. They were all smiling. They were all happy. Yeah. Which made it good. You know, if certain countries you go to, there's always an element of suspicion. And I'm sure if you were maybe some places in, take for example, the Middle East, it mightn't go down as well. But that's what made it, I suppose, enjoyable. There was one morning, actually. I was just driving. I drove past actually the day before, and there was a breakdown. I think it was a version two that the cab up, and anyway, there was a bit of rooting going on. And the next day, I was coming back. The recovery mission was on. They mustn't have got it repaired. So I just pulled up in the car and have a bit of Spanish, and I just explained to them what it was about. And they said, "Oh yeah, no problem. Work away." So basically, they had an FL7 rigid, probably one of the roughest trucks I've ever seen in my life. You know, you'd quite regularly see trucks with just bits missing off and grills and bumpers and stuff like that. But they had pulled the version two out from underneath the trailer. And they had an NL12 as the, you know, the recovery truck that was going reverse underneath it, and then they used the FL to tow the version two. But the stuff was just so rough. I actually gave them a hand then to the head was just sitting on the ground, and I was looking at, they're going to lift that up. The body was made of wood, like, just, it was like a real Flintstones kind of a body on this FL. And I gave them a hand to lift the. There was four of us, you know, lift. It's quite heavy. I thought we got halfway up, and I thought this is not going to work. But no, they kept that, and we put it up. And but anyway, I was looking at my hands out, were all oil after, and like, I didn't dare. I didn't. There was no such thing as baby wipes there or hand cleaner or anything. Like, didn't even have a rag, you know. But they were happy enough, just smiling away, and you know. But definitely no problem, no hostility, nothing like that. They were just happy to have their picture taken. And like I said, you know, great to see kids in trucks and whole families and that, you know.
Yeah, it sounds amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, brilliant. So where do you go from there then?
So okay, went back to Ireland then. I had a week. I was only back in Ireland for a week. So then I headed to the next trucking related trip after that then was Norway,
So it's
which,
quite a change in temperature then, isn't it?
yeah, big change. Yeah, big change. So that was, we went there in early, maybe it's the 8th of February. So I went with a friend of mine, Kevin Feeney. So that's the third time we've gone together. So he's into the same kind of thing as I am, you know, trucks and scenery and that as well. So again, flew into Oslo, and actually hired another Toyota RAV4. That was the
Okay.
one. Yeah, that was the one that came up at the best value, and it had such a, you know, it had experience of it. It was a pretty similar model to the one I had in Bolivia, except it was a higher spec. And you know what? I actually got really, really got to like that. We had an XC60 when we were there last year. But those I've found, Matt, with modern vehicles, it's now, which is the one that annoys me least. That's what it's come to. And in fairness to that Toyota, like, it was you didn't, every time you turn on the engine, you weren't pressing screens, turning off this and turning off that. Like, it was pretty it was enjoyable to use, enjoyable to drive. Big thing there is just you want a heated steering wheel and heated seats. So it was 2 liter petrol hybrid. Oh yeah, that, by the way, when you go to hire a car in Norway now, and you go to the list of on the websites, it's all electric cars. If you look, if you scroll a fair way down, yeah. And even I was wherever we were, you know, just booking accommodation as we were going along, and I was trying to stay in, you know, small sort of apartments more or less. And you know, someone sent it to send you a reply on booking.com: "Do you need a electric plug-in?" You know. But anyway, n absolutely no interest in that whatsoever. I didn't want that to be sort of dictating your routes and
No,
doing anything.
definitely. Definitely not.
No, when you pull into service station, like there was one service station near a place called Alvdal, and we stopped there last year, and you can see that there's even a lot more electric vehicle chargers than there had been previous, and people are just there. There was more cars charging there than there actually was at the pumps, you know.
Wow.
In a lot, yeah, and in a lot of cases, you know, you just pull in your. We just want to go in for a coffee and a hot dog, which is basically all you get in a filling station there, or a you know, or some sort of a creamy bun. But they've taken away the car parking spaces just for
Ah.
normal. Yeah, and I think people you will see more of this when. So you've got a well, just a service station, and they're putting in these chargers. Well, who's going to lose out? And a lot of times, it's actually the trucks. The space for trucks
Yeah.
that'll be sacrificed, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And what a contrast again with Bolivia, because I can't imagine there's a single electric vehicle in Bolivia.
No. I think they probably had spiked a little bit in Bolivia with the you know the abolition of the subsidies, but well, I definitely didn't see any anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, you probably couldn't get more of a contrast, like you say. Norway are on a big electric push. Look, they've got the money to do it, I suppose, and really you do need money to be able to
Yes.
do it. But
Yeah.
yeah, we actually did. We were there for what was it? 10, 11 days. So we did maybe 4,000 kilometers, and went further north than previous times. So basically, we left Oslo, went on the E134. There was a couple of transport companies there we wanted to call to, and then you know headed north. We went up to Strinn, stayed in Strinn for a few days. It's actually a lot colder than they normally have. Like we were, you know, you're driving along, you'd see the ice. Kind of giant icicles, you know, coming down from the rocks and the cliffs on the side of the road.
Yeah.
And when we got to Strinn, they were saying, no, it's one of the coldest they've had, but we're really lucky, no rain at all, and quite a lot of sun and
Oh,
blue
good.
sky. Yeah, so that was great. And you know, everyone out there, any of the drivers you meet, like they're all positive. There was no one kind of whinging and moaning. And you a lot of places, you just apart from Oslo, you. Any yards, we just drive in, and people don't really ask you who are you, or ask any questions, you know, or just out taking photographs. So we went up to the Lofoten Islands. We got a ferry from Bodø across. So that was like it was, you know, the same as maybe Dublin to Holyhead is about 3.5 hours on the ferry. So Lofoten is one of the kind of it's quite a touristy place, which we weren't kind of even at that time of year we weren't expecting, but it was almost overrun in certain areas with Asian tourists, and you can imagine what the standard of driving would have been there.
Not the best, I
Which,
presume.
yeah, not the best, no, but no, it was still nice to see it. And we stayed in because you know they would have in the old days and that you know in the glory days there would have been loading fish out there, and there was a I'm not sure if you know Rasmussen Transport. I wanted to got. Quite nice. They're about 50-50 Volvo Scania refrigerated company. They've got it. That's where they're from, Rasmussen. So we
Right.
called to there, and from there then back up, you know, Fosk and all the way down the E6, Fosk to Moree. And we're actually surprised to see how hilly a lot of that kind of countryside is there. So you can see why they have the big power, but yeah, not really much in the way of old trucks there. Saw some moose as well, which was
It's always
hadn't seen.
good.
Yeah, they're quite elusive, but no, I managed to get some photographs of them. So I reckon they do a fair bit of harm if you hit them, you know.
Yeah, you can see why they genuinely need a bull bar on the front of their trucks, really, can't you?
Yeah, for sure. And it's tough going on trucks out there. Like there's no motorways and you know, a lot of hills, and you can see why they get rid of them after a few years. And also, I'd say the cost to maintaining them, they don't really have in comparison to places like Greece. You don't really have these, or even you know Bolivia, where you have you know cheaper labor and lots of garages. Now they'll move them on pretty quick, you know.
Yeah, it's such a stunning part of the world, isn't it? I mean, how much sort of daylight were you getting in February?
Actually, more than we thought that was going to be an issue, but no, we'd still had ample time. Like it was, you know, bright up until you know 5 o'clock in the evening. So we were. I thought that was going to be an issue, but it was good. Didn't really get it. There was a lot of snow on the ground. There was one night we were up near Mo i Rana, and it was kind of getting dark. You generally try to be off the road before
Yeah.
dark. We ended up doing the dark, and it was snowing quite heavily. And I was hoping it wasn't going to last because you literally couldn't see anything, you know. They're
That's not
so
good.
they're no, they're so well organized, you know. They'll be out with snowplows, but a lot of the roads were, they had snow on them, but they weren't icy, if that, if you know what I mean, you know. Quite a bit of grip on them, but everyone is maintaining good momentum. You know, if the limit is 80 Ks, they're definitely doing 80, and you know, 85, 90. So there's the standard driving there is just beautiful. You know, it's a joy to drive there. Empty roads, good standard of driving, and that's one of the things that makes it for us as well.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, absolutely. So how long are you there for? Just a week?
10
10
days,
days? Yeah.
10 days, yeah. And like I said, staying away from, more or less staying away from cities, and trying to find you know, at that time of year, accommodation is pretty reasonably priced. We stayed in one before we got to Strina, and there was a nice little apartment. They actually had a sauna in the living, in basically in the kitchen, you know.
All right,
So
lovely.
that was quite cool, yeah. And then when we were in Lofoten, we stayed in, you know, they have these kind of traditional fisherman's cabins, they call them, like wood structures, you know. And it's kind of just on the water, you know. It's part of the foundation is just still on the water. Probably a little bit touristy, but it was good to do it as well. And once, you know, of course, it has a reputation for being expensive, and you know, eating out and pubs and that are. But a lot of time, you know, if you have an apartment there, you can you know, just cook your own food, and you'd be nearly glad of it sometimes. You know, even your own, have lunch during the day. Temperature wise, it I think the most we had was it got down to minus 22 or something at night time, yeah. But we went out for a walk, what I find is it's not as bad as, you know, the way you get that kind of a cold, sort of a damp wind like you get in Ireland. Or the only thing is your extremities. Now you'd want your, you know, your fingers, you'd want your fingers in your pockets or a pair of gloves on. But no, I was it, it didn't wasn't an issue at all, you
No.
know. It was quite enjoyable.
Yeah, I've often found that, like, if it's as long as it's like a dry cold, it's much more manageable, isn't it? I mean, because remember years ago we were in Kazan, and that's sort of regularly about -29, but it was sort of dry, and it was obviously cold, but not that bad. When we got back to Moscow, the temperature rose. It was about -10, I think it was, but because it was a bit more damp, it felt worse than what it had in Kazan. It's quite strange, really.
Yeah, that's no. You're dead right. Like if someone told you like minus 22, you know, you'd think, God, it must be unbearable. No, there was no wind. But we did find all right that a beer will freeze at that temperature in the boot of the car. So,
That's not good.
no. Well, there was other times it would have been down to minus 10, and we had beer in the boot of the car. But came to the next evening, and it was a bit of a surprise when it just keeps frothing out the top. So, it
Put
will.
your beer in a microwave to warm it up.
You freeze. I don't know what happened there, yeah. But no, the supermarkets are quite good, and quite handy there as well. So that was Norway, yeah.
This episode of Matt's Truck and Grep podcast is kindly brought to you by Ewan Marshall Limited, a haulage company based on the Scottish borders who undertake general and bulk haulage across the UK and Europe. Thank you very much, Ewan, for your kind support and your kind words. They're really much appreciated. So back to Ireland from Norway,
I
I
turned
guess.
from Norway, yeah. And so, you know, the current state of affairs with returning to Australia, well, flights is that's kind of a side issue, you know, going through the Gulf at the moment. So I'll have to look at maybe going through via Singapore, or but anyway, I suppose the news up there is the weather, the amount of rain they've had, like the worst or the heaviest rain and biggest floods in 20 years, where I left the truck up in Catherine. That town has been, I sent you a couple of pictures there, you would have seen how much rain they got there, and you know, various parts across the top of Australia. So hence why you haven't gone back there yet.
Yeah, I'm not surprised, really. I mean, one photo you sent me for the listener, we'll perhaps put up on the socials. There's a particular bridge, and it's split 50-50. In the dry season, like the gorge, it's marked up the like the pillar of the bridge, the support, and it hits like the top is what 19 meters, I think it said.
Yeah.
And then with this rain, that water has hit like the bottom of the bridge. There's like 19 meters worth of water flowing underneath it. It's just mind-boggling to me. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, and then of course, you know, main arteries, like main roads are closed, and then you have all the subsequent damage to the roads after, you know, there's water just
Yeah,
flowing over the
the
top of the
flash
road and
floods.
flash floods. Yeah, so that'll put a halt to things. Like the yard, I saw pictures from the yard, like there's water in the pit, and the main depot there is Darwin, where most of the trucks are left. You know, Catherine's quite a smaller depot, and I suppose I left it there. I can put it in the shed there, but I wasn't expecting that much amount of
No.
rain. Someone had said to me, "Oh, you should leave it up and down. What if it rains?" But the chances of it are, you know, it's 20 years since it happened. But there you go. You just never know. Like, it's one thing you can never predict or never mitigate against, I should say, is what the weather is going to do. And you know, there's been seasons where they've started in January, they've started moving cattle in February, but it'll be probably after Easter at this stage when I go back out there.
Fair enough. So I take it with the holidays and whatnot, and not going back to Oz, you've had to go back to work in Ireland, have you?
Yeah, just did finally said I better go and do something. You know, you're trying to kind of cram in all the things you can't do for the rest of the year when you're out there and driving. So after that, I actually did a week at home, just on moving floors. So that was my first experience in I was driving a Renault T-Hi. I
Yeah.
don't know if you've I know you're driving a T-Normal a lot of the time, aren't you?
Yeah, I am. Yeah, with a walking floor, funnily enough.
Yeah. So that was the first time. So it was a 2024 model, not the Evolution, not the newer one, but it was well spec. Like, it was a twin tag and full air, all of those kind of things. So
Yeah, what do you think of it?
I wanted to like it more than I did, if
Right.
that. Yeah, there was good points and bad points. What I found, it was very good driving position, comfortable to drive. The steering wheel comes back. It was a lot of the time I don't really have the steering wheel at this, you know, vertical position anyway. So that was all right. I just found, I don't know, was it the fact that the roads were bad, that it was a twin, that it was a tag, and that also it was on air. It took a little bit of correcting.
Yeah.
By now, I was talking to a guy recently, and he had a mid-lift one that he enjoyed, and he found the same thing. So look, I don't know. The thing, one of the kind of immediate thing which kind of I disliked, was I just found with my left leg was, you know, in the normal position, and then when you want to kind of move it or pull it back, it kind of gets narrow. You know, you've got the dash kind of coming out on top of it, and I looked across the passenger side, and I was like, oh, there's acres of room over there. So this has obviously been something. It's been like a right-hand drive where you're kind of losing out on that bit of leg room. So I was a bit disappointed with that. The dashboard, you had one little spot for your phone. That was it. There was nothing else for, as far as, you know, putting your wallet and stuff into it. Coffee cup holder was pretty poor. Like, I've got one of those kind of thermos things. It was rattling around in it. So look, that's probably just the immediate kind of things. I didn't do any nights out, and it looked like a nice cab to do a night out in. I'd say if I had a, you know, probably a left-hand drive one,
Yeah.
I probably would have had a different view on it. I just didn't find it, but kind of waking up in the morning, really getting overly excited about it. You know, it did everything pretty good. Like, you know, you'd drive on a regular basis, maybe get to like it a little bit more. But anyway, that was my take on it anyway.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, yeah, I'm unfortunately not a massive fan of the T that I drive, but it is a very basic fleet spec pusher axle. It's 68 plates, so it's what, 8 years old. And again, my biggest bugbear is that's the lack of steering wheel adjustment, but I know that that's been corrected with the newer one, and the newer ones are a lot more comfortable. But I know people who have the T high, and they absolutely rate them, and they've driven super space cabs and big Scanias and stuff like that, and they say they sort of, and these are obviously guys who are doing the nights out in them, so it must be a fairly good truck.
Yeah, and that's not, look, that's just an honest, like, I'm not slating it. I'm just saying that just a little
Yeah.
thing that I noticed it, and it looked like a nice truck to do a night out in. I've driven a couple of Magnums, not that many. They were both left hookers, and I absolutely loved the Magnum. So maybe I had kind of high expectations, you know, of getting that same feeling, you know. But
Yes.
definitely just little things like the dashboards. Yeah,
Yeah.
I found there was
Could it could just be a lot better.
Yeah, just but look at They all have all trucks that I don't think there's any of them that are 100% perfect. You'll always find little things here and there. One thing that actually wasn't very handy was with the walking floor when you're you couldn't put it on high idle with the handbrake off, you know, just to let it push itself forward. And I had heard that before. Someone was telling me about in the Mercedes, and they had the same thing. So I don't know, a lot of things now you need to program this or kind of program that outlet. So
I mean, it's because the Artico drive, you could have the handbrake off and revving it, that's not a problem, and it'll push itself forward. But the eight wheeler rigid, if the handbrake's off and you open the door, it pulls the handbrake on automatically,
I
which
hate
is
that.
a great safety feature. But it doesn't have it in the Arctic, which I just find a bit strange. And why is that not quite a general thing across the board with trucks anyway? Just to be on the safe side, I don't know, but that's a bit of a by the by.
So look, to sum up, like it wasn't that I didn't intensely dislike it or anything, you know. It was just wanted to like it a little bit more than I did, and maybe if I had a sort of if I had a like you know, I'll say it again, a left-hand drive one, maybe you'd, you know, get to like it a bit more. There is a lot of stuff that Renault do quite well. Like it was comfortable to drive and seats, you know, all that kind of thing.
Yeah, fair enough. So what, you just did a week on that or a couple of weeks?
Just did a week on that, and so after that, of course, then had to get out and do a couple of more kind of longer stretch the legs a bit and do a few longer ones. So that brings me to where I am now at the moment. I'm actually
Because
sitting here in.
you've not actually told me where you
No,
are. This
no.
is a su surprise.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So I did a run down to Italy. Started off in a few drops in Le Havre in France, and then down to work my way down to Italy and down was around Treviso and finished around Ancona, Pescara, and I'm currently in Sicily.
Really? Oh, wow.
It's a first for me. I wasn't expecting it, so got a ferry from San Giovanni, Villanova San Giovanni, last night. So that's like I was actually on the ferry for 45 minutes, off in Messina.
Can you pay on card now? Because the last time, I mean, it's been a long time since I went to Sicily, but that was cash only to
Yeah,
pay for ferry.
someone else had said that to me, and I had the cash ready. But when I said it to him, I think he would have taken the card as well. So it was 260 € for a return ticket.
Wow.
So yeah, it was actually quite interesting when I got there. It had all the kind of hallmarks of that kind of a classic scene. You know, when you get there's always a nice little bit of kind of chaos and pandemonium. Someone waving their arm around,
Oh,
some
yeah. Yeah.
disgruntled Louis, like in a pink jumper. I don't know. He was giving out about someone was in the queue in front of him, and the guy with the yellow jacket was just laughing at him. But anyway, the truck, there was a beautiful V8 Eurostar pulled up beside me,
Yeah.
just immaculate, and it was just running so sweet. You know, I wouldn't have really heard many of those V8 Ivecos taking over, but this thing was just, it was really, really sweet, and the fridge with Speedline alloys on it. And you know, that was great to see. There was a Magnum then, like one of the, you know, flat sort of Magnums from, you know, about 2006, that era, you know.
Yep, yep.
Yeah, and so when you're driving onto the ferry there, you have to go under like a little low bridge that the rail passes over it. So it's 4.1 meters, like it's tight. It is tight and
Yeah.
narrow. And there's another one you go underneath. So yeah, it came off then in Messina, and you have to kind of go around. There's like a circular thing. You go around twice. It's to get you up on the next level, but like it's straight into big. There was a DAF rigid and drag in front of me, a lot of like oranges on it. And he was just crawling along. I was wondering what's wrong with him. But I came to it with a pothole that big that I was wondering if I was going to catch the bumper on it, you know.
Flipping heck.
And yeah, if you had a solar guard thing, I think you'd want to be raising the air in the front if you had it. But no, it was somewhere I've never been before, so quite lucky to.
Oh, excellent. Oh, yeah, I've only ever been there the once. And what's the capital? I can't think what it is now. It's not Palermo. We
Yes.
did a show there, finished a show, out, got the ferry back. And is the motorway all finished now down to the bottom?
When I come off the ferry last night, only drove for about maybe half an hour, and I'm still 3 hours from Palermo. I just had little services here, so I haven't really seen that much of it. Tomorrow now I'll get to drive and see a bit more of it. But yeah, I presume it Yeah, it's motorway. Would you say is Palermo not the capital? No.
No, it is. Yeah, sorry, I just couldn't think of it. I thought
Oh, you're right. You're
yeah, it
definitely
is Palermo.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, I couldn't, because you hadn't told me where you were, I couldn't quickly research it before we started
Oh,
recording, you
sorry.
see. So,
Nice one to talk. Yeah.
yeah, but yeah, when we finished the show in Palermo, back to the boat and back onto like mainland Italy, I started heading north, and the road was shut because they're doing roadworks, so they're still building the motorway all the way down to the bottom. And I got sent from memory, got sort of sent up the coast road and then up and over the top of the mountains to drop back down. And it was hard work, but beautiful. But I was just thinking, I've got a long way to go, and I really want to be getting going. Because I think the journey south, I think it had been 20 hours driving from Carrizio, where I've been parked, to get down there. I think I did 2 10-hour shifts to get to Palermo from memory.
All right. Well, sorry, I thought you were asking about motorway in Sicily. No, there is motorway all the way, yeah, from basically all the way to the whole length of Italy. So yeah, it was quite. So yesterday I left up. I was up around just north of Naples. And really, really enjoyable drive all the way. Different than what I was expecting. I thought it was going to be more barren, but no, it's still quite green. We're going through a lot of mountains with that kind of typical sort of Italian style with trees under the back. But then you were down into a couple of fertile valleys. But I think the thing I find about Italy is, especially up around the north, like that A4 from Milan across to Venice, there, it's just chock-a-block with traffic. Of course, it's a traffic on the route as well, but. You end up just out in the middle lane. If you're doing a sort of a reasonable enough speed, most of the day you're out and overtaking, and it actually gets a bit tiring after a while. So it was quite nice to get into a quieter part where you could.
So once you're sort of south of Bologna and heading south, it just eases off, doesn't it? And it just becomes, and again, like as you said, look, going across to Ancona, as soon as you can see the Adriatic, it's just like, oh, this is lovely. This is bloody lovely. And just sort of keep going. And yeah, just get so much quiet. And it is just so much different down the south, isn't it? It really is.
Yeah, for sure. Like I'd never really been down past Naples before, so I came across there was a road I hadn't been on either, Pescara across the motorway tram there, L'Aquila. So there's actually a bit of snow there coming across. So the weather is actually, hasn't been as it's hard to know what clothes to bring. So they did a run to France the week before La Rochelle, and then down to Carcassonne, loading Carcassonne back up. So today is the first day actually of put the shorts on. It's we even had a bit of sleep yesterday, so
Oh,
it's
crikey.
yeah, but it's not it's it, it it's quite nice here now.
Have you got a fridge on then? Is it, I
Got a
presume?
fridge on fridge, yeah. So I think I'll be loading in Palermo to go back to Ireland. So I don't know if that's Tuesday or Monday, but I'll definitely try for tomorrow anyway. So where I'm parked here, there's so this Truckfly app, I don't know if you've used that before or if, yeah, I've like kind of a late adopter to it, but it is really, really handy. So it's just a little filling station. It's a little bit closer to the motorway, but it's not too bad. There's a couple of Polish trucks there. There's a truck from Serbia and two Greek trucks, which is nice.
Yeah, lovely.
As I think there's a Greek guy behind me, and he's got an Ocean Race version 3. But a tanker, he said he's got a lot of orange juice on, but they're always friendly. There's an R730 Greek one with an ex-German Euroliner on it. So yeah, so I always like to see a few Greek trucks as well. So I just
Oh,
went for a
yeah.
walk. You can walk down into the walk from filling station down into the town. So walk down to the coast there and got a coffee and a couple of things in the supermarket. So just, yeah, kill the rest of the day here. It's not looking out at the Tyrrhenian Sea. I think it is. It's not a bad life, really.
Oh yes, bloody splendid. I'm looking out the window now. It's really grey and overcast. I think it's going to rain at some point, and it's really windy. It's not a huge amount of fun, but I'm gonna retire to the pub soon and have a warming pint. And a friend has made some cheese and Marmite straws, so a little snack as well, which would be nice.
I might try. That actually, that sounds good. So when you say straws, you mean.
Like cheese straws, like little snack.
Oh,
But she puts a bit of Marmite in them as well, so So you really are either going to love them or hate them, and I love mine. I would slav. I'll put about 1 foot on toast if I could.
I'm on a similar page, so it's for me. It's Vegemite is the big one in Australia.
Oh yeah.
So these little crackers with Vegemite and cheese. That's one of my favorites.
Oh yeah, splendid. Really, really nice. And I used to work with an Aussie guy, and he would always go on about Vegemite is so much better than Marmite. And another guy was like, there's no difference. So like, yeah, there is. He said, I'll tell you what, you open that jar of Marmite and hold it upside down above your head. And I just thought, I don't think Marmite really flows like that. You'd have to stand there for an awful long time with this jar to try and let it drip on your head. But obviously Vegemite's a lot more solid, isn't it? I haven't had Vegemite for years. I know this is not exactly truck related, is it?
Some will relate to it anyway. I always bring Vegemite back to Ireland. We buy a big jar of it. So it's like it's a yeast extract. So
Yeah, exactly. It's much the same, isn't it? So what's the sort of rough plan going forward? You are obviously actively trying to get back out to Oz. It's just kind of obviously, I mean, by the time this airs, it's going to be a few weeks, I would say. By the time this gets out, the whole world could be a very different situation again. So is that your sort of plan?
They're planning to go back out. So, like I said before, we never, I never book it. It's all always you just book it once you find out what's going on. I don't want to be out there and there's nothing going on, and
Exactly, yeah.
it doesn't suit them either. So, and there's plenty of things I can be doing back here while that's going on. So, I sometime after Easter, Matt, I've got a friend out there. He's starting to do a little, well, not a huge amount, but he's right, works for the same company. And I said, well, whenever they put someone else in, I won't call it my truck because I don't own it, the company on it. But whenever they put someone else in the truck that I've been driving for the last few seasons, then I'll start panicking,
Yes, definitely.
But it is such a seasonal job, it suits some people and doesn't suit others. But in the meantime, it's not too bad here. I can fill in a bit of time, and they always have just drivers who take holidays, and it's just, it's.
Yes, there's always something to do, so you just
Privilege.
keep a bit coming in, sort of thing.
I wouldn't call the driving around Ireland when the weather's bad. I wouldn't. That's not really as much of a holiday, but this definitely is anyway.
Yeah. What are you in a Scania at the moment?
Yeah. 770.
7 7. Oh, it's only a little one then.
Only little one.
Only a little baby one.
Bit disappointed to be honest now.
Yeah.
I wouldn't do that. No, I put it like, no. When you, I've often looked at it, you think that must be, immense, the power in that. So I suppose it's the way they're set up with the diffs. The truck will do 1,000 RPM, 12th gear. They don't have the overdrive that the 660s do.
Right.
So anyway, you still have to drop it. Going into a hill at 1,000 RPM, doesn't matter what power you have, it's still gonna die off. So I still drop it a gear, and it's really like the first few days. I had it. You wouldn't really know. Is it a 590? Is it a 660? I was in Ireland for a day or two with it, and you. It's only really until you get into a big hill and obviously fully loaded, and after that, then it is impressive, But it's kind of not what you might be expecting, It's not the kind of rip your face off kind of power, It's
Yeah, it will just get up there a lot quicker than what a 420 or a 450 will, sort of thing. Yeah.
Well, look, it makes driving a lot more comfortable. The other way, if the roads are so congested, you come to a hill and you're kind of doing the same speed, and you're like, I don't want to start passing this lad, and then I'll die off. You know that,
Yeah.
like, unless he's really, really light, like, most trucks, if there is a bit of a rise, you can get a bite. And so it probably makes things a bit more relaxing.
Yeah, definitely.
So there's good. I don't know. There seems to be loads of them in Ireland, for example, anyway.
Well, they've always seemed to love their big power and their V8s in Ireland, haven't they? Which we've talked about before.
So, it's got the only, I suppose I might as well mention it. It's got one of these new screens, and I'm definitely not a fan of the screen, that's for sure.
Okay.
No, the I think you know the I think the screens, I was asking a guy the other day, they came in at about 24, but if you had like a 20, if it, certainly if I had a 2023 one or one pre. This big flat screen that there's so many things I dislike about it. I'd definitely stay in, you'd be as well stay in the one pre the big screen.
Right, okay.
Basic things that you shouldn't have to really put a thought process into. You should be able to just reach your hand out and do it. Like I'll tell you, for example, so at nighttime you wake up, I'll just turn on a light on. I'm actually going around with a torch, and then you just quickly turn on, and the whole screen lights up and the radio comes on. And yeah, just it's just a bit. Yeah, look, like I said, there are other stuff that'll disappoint you with them, but especially when they had it pretty good, maybe they have to go for these screens now. I don't know, but I reckon less screens and more buttons, you know.
Oh, 100%, and one of the most common ones as well that people have said with regards to this is for a PTO, just have PTO on a switch, not on a
Yeah.
screen. Because especially, I think there's been a few issues with them screens, like losing power and not
Yeah.
working. So if that's the case, you can't put your PTO in, can you?
No. And one, the air suspension is one thing that's on it now. It still has the hand control, but I do know of guys who have actually got buttons put back in for the air. It actually went black. The screen just went blank the other day when I was driving along. So there's yeah, there's like there's a lot of things with it. But look, it's very well spec truck. For me, the first thing I get in, once it has a coffee maker and a microwave, I'm happy. That is, especially when you're living in them, the micro that coffee maker, it's brilliant. Really, really love it. And the microwave, and they are good. It's apart from the screen, it's a quite a well designed dash. You've
Yeah.
got you've got the little places to put things and that. So look at I always have to find something to give out about,
I mean, it's just an honest opinion, isn't it?
Well, here's one for you, right? And I would sign off on this. So I've got a. Well, I'll just say who it is. Kevin Feeney. He had a. He has a 2016 R560 Euro 5 from new. Put 1 million kilometers on it, and begrudgingly got out of it to get into a 660S. All the bells and whistles, big fridges, two fridges, coffee makers, full air, you name it. And he did a couple of months. Well, he did 3 or 4 months in it. And he asked for his 560 back.
Really?
Yeah, he's back in it now. So,
Well,
I'll ask you. And here's the question: like, what other generation of trucks are is there? Guys who they don't want the next level; they want to go back. So, for example, just keep it on Scania when the 143s and then the 144s come out. I know they weren't perfect, okay, but they had more space. And then the R series, they were kind of getting better all the time. I don't
yeah.
know if things are getting better or not now as far as vehicle development goes. How did they reach a point and then it's just like, hang on, it's actually just getting to be annoying now.
Yeah, it's not as good as what I had, sort of thing. That's
Yeah,
interesting. It's an
yeah.
interesting point, and I know because it's quite an age-old thing, isn't it? Like, and we've talked about it on the podcast before, and I have with other people. Like, as soon as a picture, especially like a 143 or an F12 or 16, comes up online, the amount of people, oh, I'll drop, I'll change my brand
I
spanking new
know.
truck for that in a heartbeat. It's just like you wouldn't, no, you
Yeah,
wouldn't,
well, there's a
but.
guy. Yeah, there's a guy who has.
But would
So,
you exactly? But would you? And I have said genuinely for the work that I currently do on the walking floors, I would genuinely prefer to have a manual truck because I do an hour and a half each way on rural roads, and for the manoeuvring bit to line up the pipes and whatnot, having a clutch to feather would just make life so much easier. But for any other like you said about that A4 across the top of Italy and sort of go around like the Milan Ring or M25, whatever. I wouldn't want a manual for that anymore. I'm quite happy to have an auto.
does
And
your Renault have
I never thought I'd say that.
does your Renault have an electric handbrake?
Yes.
Well, whenever you go back into a truck with a what we call old fashioned, a proper handbrake,
Yes.
I can guarantee you that you'll have it in. You'll put it into drive and you'll put your foot in the accelerator. Why isn't? Oh, hang on, I've got
Yeah,
electric
I'll
handbrake.
wait. Yeah, oh yeah.
Right, more or less. So, yeah, when you're going from one to, but I do like have to say the normal. But it can be a little bit dangerous. There's been once or twice where the other, I've pulled up once or twice and I actually didn't even really have it on. You're used to the other one kind of coming on more or less automatically. So I don't know if there's, you just need to be kind of careful when you're going from kind of this real futuristic stuff back to normal stuff and vice
Yeah,
versa,
definitely. You just got to be a bit aware, haven't you?
Just aware, yeah, for
Yeah,
sure, yeah.
absolutely, mate. Well,
Cheers up.
I'm gonna let you get on with your afternoon in Sicily, which sounds wonderful, to be fair, because I think we've chatted for long enough for this particular episode. But it's been great to talk to you, Paul. Now, one episode that we did talk about doing, which we never got round to with the old truck and driver one, was a great Scania versus Volvo debate, wasn't it? And I think if we put it out there now on the air, that we're going to have a chat about that at some point and see what other people have got to say, perhaps. What do you reckon?
I'm all for it, yeah, of course. I'm always up for something like that, Matt.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. Yeah, we'll have a good old chat about Volvos and Scanias, and yeah, if people want to put in their 10 pennies worth via the socials, as we say on every podcast, you know, we've got the Facebook group, we've got Instagram, we've got TikTok. So by all means, get in touch and let us know, you know, good or bad for either one of the two. And at some point, perhaps when Paul's back in Australia, if he's ever got any signal out there, we can sit and have a chat about them.
For sure, no problem at all.
Brilliant. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure, Paul, to catch up with you, mate. Have a safe trip back, and yeah, we'll be in touch soon.
Well, indeed.
Lovely. Thanks a lot, mate.
You're welcome.
Speak to you soon. Cheers.